interview with Mrs. Woolsey. This is take one, side one. Okay, Mrs. Woolsey. Maybe we could start off with where you were born and what year you were born.
All right, I was born in about 50 miles from here, between Rockford and Freeport, Illinois, in 1912. Uh-huh. My father was a graduate student at Northwestern and a student at the Garrett Theological Seminary in Evanston. And German Valley was his country charge. As soon as he finished graduate school and his theological degree, he was a Methodist minister in Kansas for many years, and later went to Missouri as a Methodist minister. I was an only child, so I lived in a ministerial household, which I think, looking back on it, had a lot of advantages for me as a professor's wife, because my mother was always giving teas and entertaining whoever came through town and all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And I've never given many teas, but entertaining is easy for me because I grew up with it.
Mm-hmm. Now, what town did you spend most of your childhood in?
Well, Methodist ministers notoriously moved from place to place, so I lived in many places. Mm-hmm. I graduated from high school in Trenton, Missouri, and we lived there for 6 years, which was a long time for a Methodist minister's family. And from Trenton, Missouri, I went to college at Baker University, which is a small denominational college in eastern Kansas. My father had graduated there.
Oh.
It's still a small but thoroughly accredited college.
Mm-hmm.
It was a college before Kansas was a state. And Abraham Lincoln wrote them a congratulatory letter. Well, anyway, I graduated from college there in 1934. This was the height of the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
I had a degree in English, which was totally useless. So I decided to go to nursing school. Now, this was perfectly crazy for everyone who knew me, because I'd never even held a baby since I was an only child.
Oh.
But anyway, a very good friend of my father's recommended that I try to get into nursing school at Yale or Western Reserve or Johns Hopkins. Well, I wrote to the three places to get information and found that I couldn't qualify at Yale and Western Reserve because I didn't have enough science in college.
Hmm.
They at that time were giving degrees in nursing.
Mm-hmm.
Johns Hopkins was not giving a degree, they just trained you for an RN. But they accepted me, and when I got there, I found that 75% of my classmates already had college degrees.
Oh, really? Interesting.
And, well, we had to be 21 to enter.
Oh.
So all the people in the class had either been to college or had done something after high school. They'd been secretaries or something of that sort.
Mm-hmm.
So they were, the Hopkins said they wanted mature young women. And so I was a student nurse there for 3 years. I think we got a very, very good nursing education there. And then because I was an only child and my parents were in Missouri, I thought I'd better get closer to home. So I took a job in obstetrics at Barnes Hospital. I didn't see my parents any more often than I had in Hopkins, and I didn't like Barnes very much. I was on night duty on the delivery floor for many months, and there was no air conditioning then, and St. Louis is about as hot as any place can be. And I didn't like the philosophy of the particular people with whom I worked. It was a very good experience. I worked very hard. But I was offered a job as a head nurse in neurosurgery at Hopkins. And I went running as fast as I could go. And I was a head nurse of, not neurosurgical operating room, but neurosurgical ward at Hopkins.
Now, what year was this?
Oh dear, this was 1939, perhaps.
Excuse me, could I ask you, did you When you, as you were growing up, did you want to be a nurse? Or?
I never thought of it until I graduated from college.
Was it because there weren't so many options for you?
There were not very many options because it was the height of the Depression. Mm-hmm. And I knew I didn't want to teach, and that's about all I could do.
Mm-hmm.
A great many young women at that time got married the minute they graduated from college.
Mm-hmm.
I had no prospects. And so I had to do something. And why nursing appealed to me, I don't know, except that when we were in college, we were very interested in all the social services of all kinds. And that attracted me, and I don't know why,
mm-hmm.
really. But I did love it from the minute I started. I enjoyed every minute of it.
Mm-hmm.
We worked dreadfully hard as student nurses. We worked 52-hour week, and had we worked 6 hours on Sunday and 6 hours one other day during the week. So we worked every day.
Wow.
And but we had a very good education. Nothing happening on the wards was permitted to interfere with classes for the students.
Mm-hmm.
And we had very good education on the wards by the supervisors and head nurses.
Mm-hmm.
They insisted that we take 1 month vacation every year.
Yeah.
And it was all in all a very good experience. Well, then in any case, I went back to Baltimore and was head nurse in neurosurgery for about 2 years. And then I had received a scholarship when I graduated from nursing school, so I went to Teachers College, Columbia, in 1940, I think, to begin work on a master's in nursing supervision.
Wow. That's unusual.
At that time, many nurses were going to graduate school, either
mm-hmm.
getting master's or PhDs in nursing. It was the coming thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Teachers College was a very, very good one. I hadn't had any sciences in college except the most essential ones. So I couldn't get a master's in 1 year. I had to take chemistry and physics and bacteriology as well as nursing subjects. So I had enough money to last for a year, and I went back to Hopkins then as a teaching supervisor in pediatrics, thinking I'd save my money and go back and get a master's and then maybe a PhD. Well, a short few months after I'd been back to Hopkins in pediatrics, I met Clint, my husband. We'd both been around Hopkins together for many, many years, but had never met each other
uh-huh.
that I knew of.
Uh-huh.
And since I'd been in neurosurgery, I knew the neurosurgical anesthetist very well. At that time, they had nurse anesthetists,
mm-hmm.
and she was indeed a fine one. But I saw her in the hospital corridor one day, and she welcomed me back from New York and asked me to her apartment one evening so we could catch up on the gossip. And her apartment was just below the apartment my husband had. So he came in and was introduced, and then he walked me home,
mm-hmm.
and that was it. We were married the following spring. And I continued to work for a few months as pediatric supervisor. We were both older than most people are when they were married.
Mm-hmm.
And our family came in very early. Very soon we have 3 sons. They're exactly 2 years apart. The oldest was born in 1943. He's now a professor of anatomy at the medical school at Washington University in St. Louis.
Oh.
And he's also a neuroscience coordinator for the medical school and Washington University. Number 2 son is an artist. He paints, and his wife is an artist, and she paints, but they make their living doing graphic designs for research, graphic illustrations for scientific research.
Oh.
They have their own business in Philadelphia, which they started a year and a half ago or so, and very prosperous.
Great.
Number three son is here in graduate school in freshwater biology. The four grandchildren, our two older ones are married, and our youngest one is still single, lives here in Madison over mm-hmm. on the other side of town.
Mm-hmm.
When we moved here, they were 1, 3, and 5.
Oh. How did you feel about coming to Madison?
Well, I thought it was fine because it was a very nice opportunity for my husband. He was invited to come as a research professor mm-hmm. to develop the neurological sciences. And he started out to be a neurosurgeon and got sidetracked and went into neurological or neuroscientific research, neurophysiological research. I've spent most of my life trying to explain to friends and relatives what basic research is. It's impossible to explain. Anyhow, we found Madison a very pleasant place. When we first came, Madison was much more proper socially than it is now. I had numerous callers from faculty wives.
Did you move in this house?
We moved directly into this house. When we came, we were told there were only 3 houses suitable for us in Madison. And the university houses just opened because we came in 1948. Mm-hmm. And we could have gone there, but we saw this house and liked it, and we still do.
Mm-hmm.
Very convenient, good neighborhood. What else? Well, our oldest started kindergarten at Randall School immediately. I was talking about the faculty wives who came to call.
Mm-hmm.
They appeared with beautiful hats and bouquets of flowers about 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Paid a very proper call.
Uh-huh. That was medical faculty?
These were wives of medical faculty.
Faculty.
I think entirely.
Uh-huh.
When they came and stayed for 20, 30 minutes in the old Victorian tradition of an afternoon call, I noticed when they left, they looked for some place to leave their calling card. And I remembered that my mother had a place to put calling cards, so I thought, well, I must put out something. But as soon as they left, I got busy unpacking. And I said to myself, well, tomorrow I must stop earlier and wash my face and make some tea and put out this little thing for calling cards. But somehow I kept working and working, and the doorbell rang,
oh,
and there was another one. And I still procrastinated about washing my face and putting out the little tray for the calling cards. I remember one lady came, I was upstairs bathing the 1-year-old when the doorbell rang. So I wrapped a towel around him and brought him down, and we sat and talked for 30 minutes with him on my lap, wrapped in a towel. Well, they all went to Randall School, and we did all the usual things, PTA, Cub Scouts. Since I'd been a nurse, I volunteered to help with the visual and hearing testing at Randall School once a year. And we helped with resales and did all the things that all the people in this area did.
Mm-hmm. Did you pretty much, during that time, do mostly child-oriented activities?
Well,
was there much?
From the very beginning, we had visitors from everywhere coming either for meals or to stay as house guests.
Nice.
Everyone who came to visit my husband, or almost everyone who came to visit my husband, came for a meal, and many of them came to stay all night or 2 nights or 3 nights. At that time, and for many more years, my husband was doing about 3 all-night experiments a week. And I always cook midnight supper for the experimenters, which was fun for me until the morning when I had to get up and get kids off to school. It was hard to get up. We've never had a 9-to-5 existence because my husband has always worked very irregular and very long hours, like all the medical people do, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't like a 9-to-5 existence, would you?
It's nice to have flexibility.
Non-routine.
Yeah.
We did, Madison was a fairly vigorous social community in those days. There were a lot of parties, dinner parties among the people. Most of ours were medical school oriented, or although we had many friends who were in psychology and other fields. So it was a pretty broad spectrum. We also enjoyed very much the concerts at the Union and the plays at the Union, so it was a diversified experience.
Mm-hmm.
So those early years when you came, you were pretty much concerned with bringing up your three boys and helping your husband with his life and what he was...
Well, all my help for my husband has been vicarious,
mm-hmm.
because I learned, I think, very early that I should not meddle in neurophysiology. As neurophysiology.
Mm-hmm. But I meant by feeding the night.
Entertaining the people and feeding the night mm-hmm. shift and that sort of thing. That was all. I think some people work very closely with their husbands in science, and I probably would have enjoyed it, but I think some husbands and wives do not work well together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that my most happy existence for myself and for him was for me to do other things
mm-hmm.
than pay much attention to neurophysiology.
Mm-hmm.
I had enough medical background to know what they were talking about
mm-hmm.
and what they were doing and how they were doing it, but not to take any active part in it.
Mm-hmm.
The first... We came in August of 1948, and the University League Fall Luncheon was a grand tradition, and our first fall here, I think it was around the 1st of October, Mrs. Fred, who was the wife of the president of the university, asked me to go to the luncheon with her.
Mm-hmm.
My husband and Merle Curdy in history were invited to be named professors honoring the 100th anniversary of the university.
Oh.
They were the first two named professors.
Wonderful.
So that's why Mrs. Fred
mm-hmm.
came to take me to the first fall luncheon. And from then on, of course, I was in the university league doing this and that and the other thing. The fall luncheons always were very gala affairs. They were always in the Great Hall of the Union. And we always had a very interesting speaker. We all bought new fall hats to wear, and we all wore white gloves. And those have since been stopped, but they went on for a long time up until in the middle of the 60s, I think.
Then they moved out to the country club.
Then they moved to other places,
and that
was because of the difficulty on campus. People were afraid to go to the campus because of the anti-war demonstrations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there was one this fall at the Nakoma
mm-hmm.
Country Club,
yeah.
So there's still pretty much a tradition.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But thank goodness the hats and the white gloves have gone on board. Well, the first active thing I did for the University League, I guess, was to be assistant chairman and then chairman of Home Crafters.
Mm-hmm.
And this was in the 60s sometime. At that time, the University League had three special activities: Home Crafters, Madison Friends of International Students, and Hospital Services.
Mm-hmm.
And according to the league tradition, you always serve the year as an assistant and then the year as chairman of these things. They had other activities too. They gave scholarships.
Mm-hmm.
They had interest groups. I never really participated in an interest group because I had all I could do otherwise, but Homecrafters was very interesting and very time consuming. At that time, we took the stuff out that the Homecrafters had made to luncheons of all over the city. And maybe we'd sell $25 worth, but it meant a whole day for me because you had to pack all this stuff, take it out, display it, and sell a little bit, bring pack it all up and bring it home again. It was really hard work.
Mm-hmm.
And two of us usually did it. The chairman and the assistant chairman did it. And then we had two big fairs a year at Scanlon Hall. And these were tremendous jobs.
I don't remember that.
At that time, Homecrafters had an outlet at Barron's Department Store.
Oh.
And we toted all the stuff across the street to Scanlon Hall and set up Scanlon Hall full of stuff for Homecrafters and had a 2 or 3 day sale in November and one again before Easter sometime.
Mm-hmm.
And this was very interesting, but an awful lot of hard work.
Right.
And we felt that we really had done a marvelous job if we sold $8,000 worth of stuff. Mm-hmm. Later on, the league was selling the Homecrafters things, and I think sometimes made as much as $20,000 for the Homecrafters. Then later on, I think in the later 60s, I was chairman for Madison Friends of International Students, and I think that year I spent 50 hours a week in volunteer work. It's changed since then, fortunately. But it was tremendously interesting. I enjoyed it very, very much.
You did this for 1 year?
Well, again, I had a year as an assistant. I had a half year as an assistant because some woman who was the assistant went with her husband to Philippines or something. So I stepped in the middle of the year as an assistant, and then the next year was the chairman. And it was It's evolved, of course, tremendously since I had direct contact with it. In 1964, we lived in Chile for 6 months.
Yeah.
My husband, for many years, had an exchange with the University of Chile, and their people came up to work with him, and two or three of our people went down to Chile to work for a few weeks, but my husband and I were down there for 6 months. And we took our youngest son with us.
Mm-hmm.
And he went to school in Santiago. He rebelled a little bit about it because he was afraid he wouldn't finish West High with his friends that he'd been with since kindergarten. But they had special classes for a lot of American kids who were down there and who wanted to get into universities in the States.
Mm-hmm.
He had a special class in American history, and he was the only student in the class.
Oh.
His teacher was from California and was down there because her boyfriend was climbing the Andes.
It worked out.
It worked out.
Yeah.
All of our sons went through Randall, West High, and the University of Wisconsin.
They all went to the University of Wisconsin?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Our oldest son went to Johns Hopkins for an MD, and our middle son went to graduate school and got his MFS from the University of Pennsylvania. And our youngest son is getting his PhD here. So we're very Madison-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
What else? Well, we've traveled a lot. Because my husband has trained people from many places,
mm-hmm.
I think from 25 or 30 different countries.
Wow.
He's had postdocs mostly.
Mm-hmm. You very often went back?
We very often went to things in other countries.
Mm-hmm.
which where my husband has organized symposia here and there, or has been invited to lecture here and there. And so we travel really a great deal,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
which is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We've done a lot of it since he retired.
Oh.
Because he retired 9 years ago. We've been to China twice.
Hmm.
I think it was in 78, there was a symposium in Bangkok, Thailand. And my husband in Baltimore had had a postdoctoral fellow from China who, with whom he hadn't had any contact during all the
oh.
all the years from early 50s on. After the Cultural Revolution, he was able to write, so he had had one or two letters from this very dear friend in Shanghai. Well, when we found we were going to Thailand, my husband said, well, let's stop in China on the way and see Chung. And so he called the State Department, and they referred him to people, and indeed, we got a visa to go to China. So we flew from here. We're in Japan for a while and had a magnificent time visiting people who had studied here.
Mm-hmm.
They showed us tremendous hospitality.
Oh, yeah.
It was beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went over to Shanghai and got there during the spring festival, the New Year, which was very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
We were there for only 3 or 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went down to Canton and were there for 2 or 3 days. And then we went on to Bangkok. Well, we were first in Hong Kong and then went to Bangkok where we were for 3 weeks. And this was marvelous.
Oh,
just
what an
marvelous.
Experience. Yeah.
Wonderful experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then from Bangkok we went to Kuala Lumpur because a former fellow was a neurosurgeon
mm-hmm.
there. And we had a marvelous time there. Then we flew over to Madras, and another former student was there and took us around. Then back to Singapore, and another student was there. We had a marvelous time. Then we went down to Sydney. No students, except they'd invited my husband to lecture.
This is all after he retired?
Yes.
Or,
oh, yeah.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
And then we went to Sydney, then to Canberra, where my husband, he lectured in all these places where he lectured, and there was a student from Madison there at that time, and she showed us a fine time, and we also knew other scientists there.
Mm-hmm.
Then we went over to Adelaide to see the widow of a fellow who had worked with my husband in Baltimore.
Oh.
And that was a delight to see her again. And then back to Melbourne, where there was a former student, and where my husband lectured. And then we went over to Dunedin, New Zealand. There had been a fellow from Dunedin here in our house for 3 or 4 days. We were snowbound. He had worked in St. Louis with our son. And then when he was on his way home, our son said, he wanted to stop in Madison, could we put him up? And of course we did. We had a tremendous snowstorm the
oh.
first night he was here, so he was snowbound on his way back home.
Mm-hmm. Let's just stop here for this tape is almost finished. The first part of the tape.
Well, that's sensible, I think.
Yeah. So in the 60s, as your children were growing up, you were active in the League, and can you tell me any other interests? In
yes, about, I think it was in 1965, I was invited to become an attic angel,
mm-hmm.
and did, and that has been a most rewarding and gratifying experience. Because, it's an exciting thing to help to give the people at the nursing home extra things,
mm-hmm.
and that's what the attic angels really do.
Mm-hmm.
They provide programs, they give them juice and water, they visit, they do all kinds of things. And I found it tremendously interesting for my own self because I met people I would never have met otherwise, non-university people. Because the Attic Angels is a cross-section of Madison.
Mm-hmm.
And we only have two meetings a year, but you meet everybody working together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the best way to know people, I
mm-hmm.
think,
mm-hmm.
is to work together.
Mm-hmm.
I was operating chairman for the nursing home for a while, which was a very time-consuming.
Operating chairman?
Yes, it's a little differently organized now, but at that time we hired professional nurses and nurses and aides and this sort of thing, but the Attic Angels had everything to do with policy, and we had many committees, the house committee, the garden committee, the planning committee, and all those sorts of things. And there was always an operating chairman on the board who dealt with the administrator of the nursing home directly, between the board and the nursing home functions, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that tremendously interesting, I suppose partly because I'd been a nurse and
mm-hmm.
had an interest in that sort of thing. And it was at that time that the Attic Angels decided to build the tower.
Mm-hmm.
So I was on the board when the tower was begun.
Mm-hmm.
Not after it was built, but for the planning, and we used to sit around and pour over blueprints and all this sort of thing. It was a most exciting time
mm-hmm.
to be around.
Mm-hmm.
And,
are you still active in the Attic Angels?
I became a sustaining member about 1976 or 77, because my husband had retired
mm-hmm.
and I wanted to be free to travel and
mm-hmm.
and do many things for him. Also, I was slowing down considerable with much less energy than I used to have, but I still do things for them
uh-huh.
occasionally.
Were you ever involved in the university hospital?
No, that's one volunteer activity of the league I never did. And I think it was 1970, I was league president, and that was a lot of fun too. I think the league is particularly fun because it goes clear across the whole university
mm-hmm.
Community.
Mm-hmm.
It's written into their constitution, you know, that the board must be selected from many departments in the university.
Oh.
And the presidency must go from part of the university to another, to another, to another.
Oh,
so when you work in the university league, you're working with people in
mm-hmm.
totally other departments throughout the university.
Mm-hmm.
The ag school, the law school, the LNS, the whole bit,
mm-hmm.
education, everything. The board must be made up across the whole spectrum, and that's why it's so interesting
mm-hmm.
to work with the league. But I guess my primary activities have been since elementary school days have been Attic Angels and the University League.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever take any courses at the university?
Before I went to Chile, I took Spanish in the regular summer school university course.
Mm-hmm.
It was hard because
I'd
been out of school for a long time. I remember handing in the first blue book for the 6 weeks exam, and the young TA looked at me with a very wry smile on his face, and I said, just forget it. This is hard work when you haven't been to school for a long, long time. And what? Then after, a few years ago, when the Regents decided that people over 65 could take anything they wanted, unless the class was full of undergraduates, I took two or three courses in art history.
Oh.
I got sidetracked a little. I'd like to go back and do some other courses
mm-hmm.
sometime.
Mm-hmm.
Those were just for fun.
Mm-hmm.
But we still keep busy entertaining people.
You still have visitors coming here?
We still have visitors.
Mm-hmm.
Fewer than 10 years ago, but still. One of my husband's students calls our house the Woolsey Hilton for fun, but we enjoy it.
Uh-huh.
We enjoy it very much. Well, what else? Well, I suppose my volunteerisms have been interests which I've pursued independently of marriage and family. And of course, I wouldn't have done University League if my husband hadn't been a university professor. But Attic Angels has nothing to do with the university. I read a lot. I love to do needlepoint. I love to knit. I'm a firm believer in volunteerism. I reckon you are too. I think the country would be in a very bad way if volunteerism dried up entirely. I think other countries are doing it a little now, but it's really a very American way of life. And it would cost a fortune if these volunteer jobs were paid for.
You're right.
And they make living much more pleasant for ever so many people. They're harder to get. It's harder to get volunteers now since women are all going back to work. Not all, but
right. So
many women are going back to work. However, I've been surprised in how many women have gone back to work and still do a little volunteerism.
I would think that would be very difficult.
I couldn't do it, but apparently some do. Or else they work part-time. Or they do volunteerism after their families are grown when the household chores aren't so great. I think if I were 10 years younger, I would probably have gone back to nursing because I enjoyed it tremendously.
You never thought about doing that after your children?
I did sort of make an overture once when our youngest one got into kindergarten because I enjoyed nursing so much. And then my children and my husband didn't say anything when I said I was going to go back to work. Because I'm a very strong person, I guess, with opinions. And they knew that I'm also contrary, and if they said they didn't want me to, I would be sure to. Anyway, they all went around looking morbid and with long faces, so I decided, well, it wasn't worth it. And I'm glad I didn't. And I don't know how I could have done, because I've been as busy as I could be for the last 35 years. But I did love nursing, and sometimes I don't really regret, but I wish I could have continued on in it in a way. But I wouldn't trade it for the kind of life I've had.
Right. It's a commitment.
Yes. Nursing is a very full commitment. I think it's an individual decision. I don't. Some of my contemporaries have gone back to work, and their families have been perfectly marvelous, and they've been much happier than they would have been doing the kind of stuff I was doing. So I think it depends on who you are and what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that way?
Yeah, I do too. Some people have so much more energy or more that need to be helping people more than other people, or like nursing, or like they need to feel more useful than they would be, say, whereas another person might not need that.
I like house prowlism. I really do. It's, a lot of it's drab, but there's no job in this world that doesn't have some drabness.
Right.
And I've enjoyed it tremendously.
Did you entertain very much?
Oh, a lot.
You did. I mean, not only the visitors that came from out of town.
Well, whenever one visitor came, we had a dinner party for 10,
right.
12, or 14 people, you see. And we did have some other dinner parties beside, but mostly the dinner parties involved neurophysiologists or neurosurgeons or psychologists or whoever seemed to be appropriate for the visitor who was here.
Mm-hmm.
And we've entertained people from many, many, many countries, and it's been tremendously interesting.
Mm-hmm.
We've been in many parts of Europe, and 2 or 3 years ago we were in Algeria for 2 weeks. That was a lot of fun and very interesting and very unlike any place we'd ever been before.
Would you, sitting here listening to you, I see a little connection, maybe you do or maybe you don't, in that your life as being as a wife of a university professor and the wife of a minister.
The child of a minister.
Child of a minister. Being helpful, community, conscious of community.
Oh, I think so. Sure. As a child of a minister, I couldn't.
A more service.
I couldn't help being service-oriented, otherwise I'm sure I never would have gone to nursing school. But when I was in college, that was a very strong emphasis to everybody in college, whether they did anything about it or not. I think everyone that I knew in college wanted to do something to help people, directly or indirectly. I guess most people I've known in my whole life have had such an orientation. I think my husband has a very strong one, even though he's in pure research. As I said, he started out to be a neurosurgeon and got waylaid into neurophysiology. He was teaching physiology at the medical school at Hopkins for many years, but did a tremendous amount of research there. And then he came here with the understanding that he was a research professor, and he was not to take on lectures to the medical students or anything of that sort. So he has lectured to the medical students, but once a year or something like that. So he really has done full-time research and trained people in doing full-time research. He has had, when the legislature says, how many hours a week do you teach? He always comes home and says, I don't teach any. But he teaches person to person for many, many hours a week, or did until he retired, and he still goes to his office every day. And he's doing a lot of writing, and he still has a lot of correspondence. And he's 79, and still doing a lot.
Right.
I don't know how to answer my reflections in light of the women's movement and how women think of themselves. As far as I'm concerned, I don't have any different ideas. Certainly I've never had anything but liberation as a woman, as far as my husband and family are concerned. They've always considered me as a person with my own rights and privileges.
So you never felt that, like a lot of women do now, that they should do their own thing? And
I was doing my own thing.
You were doing your own thing.
I've done my own thing.
Yeah.
As I said, I love nursing, and I didn't hate to give it up, because I gave it up very much on my own decision, but if I could have had 24 more hours a day, I certainly would have done that. I love that, but I've always liked what I'm doing. And I guess the only thing about the women's movement, which sometimes makes me a little angry, is that being a wife, mother, housekeeper, all those things, volunteer worker, are considered second-class things to do, and I don't think they're second-class things to do. I think if you're a woman and don't like doing them and don't want to do them and want to go out and practice law or medicine or whatever, then you should do that. But I think that housewifery is just as challenging and requires just as much brain and as much skill as a profession does. And I think that people who are really into the women's movement recognize this.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it is put, it, nevertheless, it still is
and
put
has,
down
yeah.
as a skullduggery, slavery sort of thing. And I don't think that's true at all. Mm-hmm. I do support the Equal Rights Amendment, but I'm not as vigorous about it as I should be, perhaps. I think my husband supports it more strongly than I do. No, I think it's very sad. I think one thing the women's movement has done is to bring out how sad the lives of many women are.
And the equal pay for
equal
work.
Pay for equal work, that certainly mm-hmm. should be done. Women should be able to work wherever they want, whenever they want, and that sort of thing. I think all this should come to pass, but I guess I didn't realize that so many women had such horrible existences until the women's movement pointed them up. Because all the women I know seemed to be fairly fulfilled and fairly happy in what they were doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think everything is coming out more in the open, like
oh, yes,
child abuse and wife abuse and
all these things.
Negative things
I guess
are coming out.
When I was in nursing, I knew that many of these things existed, but. And I haven't forgotten that because when I was a student nurse at Hopkins, 66% of the patients were free. And I think more than 50%, certainly more than 50% were black
mm-hmm.
and from the Baltimore slums. And we had public health nursing in the horrible part of Baltimore. So I knew how the other half lived.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't forgotten that, and I've always known that there were an awful lot of miserable people in the world and miserable people in the United States, but I guess I was not aware of how many women were miserable in their lives
mm-hmm.
and had no fulfillment, had no respect given to them by their husbands.
Mm-hmm.
Have you felt that?
No.
That because things are coming out into the open, we're much more aware of this
yes.
sort of thing?
Yes.
Child abuse, wife mm-hmm. abuse, all those things.
But not that we see it around here.
No, well, I'm sure it exists in Madison.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure also that we don't see it in this great middle-class town of ours, which is not an ordinary town.
Mm-hmm.
Never has been an ordinary town. We have a few wealthy, a few very poor,
mm-hmm.
and the rest of us are all in one great big lump.
Yeah.
But the great big lump is certainly not an ordinary middle class either.
Mm-hmm.
It's an academic or state government middle class,
mm-hmm.
which is not like the middle class in Cincinnati or any place else.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anything more to say. You got some good questions? I think our children were extraordinarily fortunate to grow up here. The schools are certainly much better than usual. The summer recreation activities were were marvelous, and I think they still
mm-hmm.
are.
Mm-hmm.
Our children were so busy in the summer doing everything under the sun. Their friends were a marvelous bunch of kids. Many of them were academic children,
mm-hmm.
which were a very stimulating group. Our oldest son, many of we faculty people get together because of the group which existed from Randall School right through West High, of that particular group. It was a very interesting one. They dated, but in general, they moved around as a great big group, about 30 kids. And they were a tremendous group of kids, and they very often came in here because we're only a block from West High.
Mm-hmm.
They'd come in those days, they kicked their shoes off in the front hall, came in and danced in their sock feet, or sat around and discussed religion, philosophy, the fate of the world, the news of the day, and that sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
while we listened to Beethoven's Ninth or something. Sorry. And it was a most extraordinary group. Our other two sons didn't have that.
This is your oldest son?
Our oldest son, but many of our friends are, we are friends because they're the parents of that particular bunch of about 30 kids.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them in the university, some in business, some in law.
Mm-hmm.
Judge Doyle's children are the same ages as our children, and their oldest one and our oldest one were in this group. Many of them are now university professors thither and thither across the land. But I always enjoyed having that bunch of kids in here. I missed them terribly when they all went off to college.
Yeah, I can imagine.
They had a very close relationship. They still feel that way about each other.
That's wonderful. This is the son in
St. Louis.
In St. Louis.
He doesn't see his classmates much anymore, but they still have this feeling about
yeah.
each other.
Yeah, he grew up in the 50s.
He graduated from high school in 61, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Their times got a little more troubled after that.
Yes, our three sons, as I said, are just 2 years apart. But our oldest didn't, he certainly had a tremendous awareness of Vietnam, but he left here. Well, there were protests on the campus when he was a student, but they were very mild.
Mm-hmm.
Our second son felt it very much more strongly, and he participated in many of the protest movements and was scared to death he'd be drafted. Well, he has a congenital malformation of a vertebra, so the Army sure didn't want a guy with a bad back to take care of for the rest of his life, and he was not drafted because of physical disability. Our third son was really a product of the Vietnam days. He had all these tremendous psychological upheavals that I think all the kids in that era have and still have.
Mm-hmm. He didn't go to Vietnam.
He was a conscientious objector.
Oh, I see.
And because we live in Madison, he was accepted as a conscientious
mm-hmm.
objector. He did his 2 years of service as a lab technician in the hospital in New York City.
Oh.
And then came back here to graduate school. One of his very close friends was killed in Vietnam. And so he was part of this whole thing, and I think there's a whole 10 years of people, worth of people who were young at that and during those 10 years, who will never be the same because
right.
of Vietnam.
I mean, I remember World War II and what a whole different attitude and feeling
oh,
about
yeah.
that war. It's very hard to understand the Vietnam. I mean, I don't, my children aren't that age.
Your children are younger.
And
but there was a period, as I say, our kids are only 2 years apart, and you can see the difference in each one as a person because of what happened to them when they were in college, or what didn't happen to them when they were in college, those particular years. But whether the kids went to college or not, I think it affected all people in that age bracket in the United States, no matter how they felt about the Vietnam War. It was terribly unsettling time.
Well, coming almost to the end of the second side of that tape, Mrs. Wolsey.
Okay, fine. I've said too much.
No.